Welcome to the Julie G Podcast. I'm your host, Julie Golub, and this podcast is all about shooting sports, competition, travel, and more. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get started with the show.
Hey, everybody. Julie G here. It is June. June is my favorite month, and that's because it's my birthday month. Yay! And it's also the kickoff to the summer season. Unofficially, the start of the summer season is Memorial Day weekend. And that always bothers me a little bit because it's a very, very special weekend. And it's great that families are out enjoying everything. But I think that a lot of times we forget the real reason of Memorial Day. And that is to thank all of our veterans, all of our service members, and especially those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in order to keep us safe and serving this great nation. They're just amazing and fantastic people. So before we even talk about summer and how awesome June is, it's really important to talk about how important Memorial Day is, to never forget, and to say thank you so much to everyone who has served. Thank you. Ah, yes, it is June, and as I mentioned, it's my birthday month. It's also the most beautiful time in Montana, I think, because everything is lush and green and growing. You've got butterflies, and sometimes thunderstorms will roll through and leave these brilliant sunsets and rainbows. Ugh, I love it. And the likelihood of it snowing is a lot lower in June than it is in a lot of the other months here in Montana. So it's definitely a good time to get some training in. So I really, really love June. June's also special for a number of reasons. There's the National Take Your Daughter to the Range Day, and that is on June 9th. And Lynn Finch has been so, I don't even know how she's put it together in such a short amount of time. She's kicked off this National Take Your Daughter to the Range Day program that has over 30 ranges. I think the count is 36 ranges that are participating all over the country. There's a website. There's been great coverage. NRA News has covered it. Local channels have covered it. Of course, all of the awesome gun bloggers out there are talking about it. And people are getting excited. And I'm excited, especially because National Take Your Daughter to the Range Day is just, well, I went to the range because of my dad. And if you know my story, you'll know that I'm a daddy's girl. And my dad was never ashamed to take me to the range. And we became buddies, shooting buddies, best friends. And I owe everything, my entire career, to my dad and the opportunities that he provided for me. So what's really special about this movement is that Lynn Finch came up with the concept and put the whole program into motion because of the fact that she read my book and the story of how I got started. So, you know, it's a special, special day. It's a special concept, and to have helped inspire it is, wow, I can't tell you how great that makes me feel. And especially the man behind it, my dad, Pete Golosky. So thank you, Dad. I love you. It's also Father's Day this month. And of course, I'm definitely a daddy's girl, and I can't say thank you and honor Dad enough on Father's Day. June 9th, National Take Your Daughter to the Range Day, is also a special day for me because I'm going to be walking for the National Kidney Foundation's Billings Kidney Walk. My dad was diagnosed with kidney disease and is on dialysis. So last Thanksgiving, I decided, you know what, no matter what matches or what's going on in June, I'm going to do this. I'm going to raise money for the National Kidney Foundation in honor of my dad. I formed a team called Team Take Aim, and we have raised well over $2,000 for the National Kidney Foundation. And that was with the help of Patty Fogle, who is one of my friends here up in Montana and a great advocate for kidney disease awareness. and Kitty Richards, who is, I love Kitty. She's awesome. She's a great, great, great representative for the shooting sports. She's very, very active in the International Defensive Pistol Association, IDPA. And she raised the most money for our team by contacting shooters from all over the U.S. And the contributions, oh, wow, I can't thank everybody enough. So, June is pretty rockin'. It's a pretty amazing month. There's so much going on. And just because it's June, and June's awesome, I am running a weekly giveaway on my blog to give away some swag for June. Last week, I kicked off the entire giveaway concept with a very schnazzy Smith & Wesson hat with silver flames. Next up for week two, there's a set of Benelli tumblers, and I'm working with my sponsors to get some really cool prizes going for the grand finale giveaway of the month. So, please check out my blog, juliegollub.com. You can click on the menu for Julie G and scroll down. You'll see blog there, and there are posts on how to enter and win. So good luck with that. So what's going on in the shooting world? Oh, so much. I have been so busy for the past few weeks. In my last podcast, I talked about the USPSA Single Stack National Championships hosted by Posse Park in Barry, Illinois. Had a fantastic match there. Was able to bring home the ladies' title. Yay! So that was really, really good. But immediately after I got back from single stack, I had to completely switch gears from an iron-sided single stack 1911, my Smith & Wesson Pro Series 9mm 1911, to a whiz-bang, crazy Bianchi open gun. And it's still a Smith & Wesson Pro Series 9mm 1911 on the bottom part, well, most of the bottom part, but the rest of that gun, well, it's purpose-built for Bianchi, let me just say that. And I did an on-the-road update from Bianchi Cup, going through all of the little things that make my Bianchi gun competitive in the open division at the NRA Bianchi Cup, the action pistol Olympics, if you will. And I'll share the link in the notes as well if you want to check that out. But action pistol, NRA action pistol, is a lot different than a lot of the other action shooting sports that participate in. Whether it's IDPA, USPSA, IPSC, Steel Challenge, Three Gun, all of those sports are very dynamic. They're constantly changing. NRA Action Pistol, Bianchi Cup, it's four courses of fire. You have the practical event, plates, barricade, and moving target event. The distances you shoot range from 10 yards all the way out to 50 yards. It's the most precision-oriented of all of the action shooting sports. Yes, we draw from a holster, but everything is fixed time, and that means faster isn't always better. In fact, that could be a very, very bad thing. The other thing that makes it unique is that there is a perfect score. 192 shots, that means a possible 1920 points with 192 X's. We shoot at tombstone-shaped targets with scoring rings, and the center X ring is a black circle that is only 4 inches. There are three divisions in Bianchi. You have open, which I mentioned earlier. That's your space gun, race gun division, where you'll see red dot optics, compensators, shrouds, wings, prone pads, all that good stuff. And then there are two iron sight divisions, metallic and production. Metallic division features iron sighted 1911s that are really, they're tack drivers. They're built to be extremely accurate out to 50 yards. And then you have production division, and that's the division that's great for entry-level shooters. Those are striker-fired and double-action guns that are allowed in the production division. For a breakdown of the events and the divisions and other information, like figuring out the correct amount of lead for your moving target event or how to shoot every single yard line and what the different events are and what you can expect at the NRA Bianchi Cup, you can check out Chapter 8, Handgun Action Shooting Sports, in my book, Shoot, Your Guide to Shooting and Competition. A lot of good information in there about Bianchi Cup. I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, but one of the things that I'm really trying to do this year in my competition season is get to a warm-up match before I have to shoot a major, a national or world championships. And that worked out really well for me for the USPSA Single Stack Nationals. I was able to compete at the Area 1 Championships in St. George, Utah. Came in second to the talented Sarah Donovan there, but it gave me the opportunity to really focus on what I needed to focus on in order to win that national title. And so when I learned that Bates City, Missouri would be running an NRA Action Pistol Regional right before, literally the weekend before the NRA Bianchi Cup, the Flagler Cup, I jumped at that opportunity. It's a fantastic warm-up because I get nervous for Bianchi. Bianchi is nerve-wracking, and to be able to shoot the course of fire in match conditions before you're out there shooting the main match is such a huge benefit. Because if you're only shooting the Bianchi Cup and you don't do anything else other than shoot some in practice, it's the nerves is like a slap in the face. It is such a crazy feeling. And because you're not doing it that often, you may only have one time a year that you're going to experience it. And so even if you've been to Bianchi five times, that's really only five times you're going to experience that sort of pressure. So shooting the Flagler Cup was a wonderful experience. And it showed me exactly what I needed to work on in order to be prepared for the main event just a few days later. I actually came in second at the Flagler Cup behind the very talented, and I'm going to butcher her name, so very sorry, Anita, Anita Makowitz. And Anita is the current reigning women's World Action Pistol world champion, and she's a fantastic shooter. So it was a good pressure cooker situation to get in. And as soon as I was done with that match, I was on my way to the practice range to work out the bugs. Now, let me talk about the practice range. The Green Valley Rifle and Pistol Club hosts the Bianchi Cup, but they also have a range that's about 15 minutes from that main match range. And it's a practice range. All four events are set up with sign-up sheets that you can sign up on. You can become a member, and with that membership, you have the opportunity to shoot from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. Now, granted, there are plenty of other shooters there, so you're not going to be able to do nonstop shooting because it is a busy hop-in place, let me tell you, and this year was the busiest I've ever seen it. But you get to literally practice the stages of the Bianchi Cup for as long as you need to, you know, basically the daylight hours. And you're going to do it alongside Action Pistol legends, Rob Latham, Doug Koenig, Bruce Pyatt, you know, the people who have won and hoisted that silver cup. That's huge. I'll tell you what, I put some serious hours in at that practice range. I am there, you know, 8 to 12 hours every day. And it's that critical time for me. I really love it because I am so focused on Bianchi. There are no distractions. I am there to shoot. I am there to figure out my game. I am there to learn to be as accurate as possible. And I love hanging out with awesome shooters and meeting people and having a good time at that practice range. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, and I think I love that just as much as I love the actual Bianchi Cup competition. It's definitely a cool thing. The other thing I love about that practice range is you have the benefit of the last minute run through or zero. Being only 15, 20 minutes away, if you have some issue come up and you need to re-zero or you need to switch out a gun, or you're just not feeling confident and want that one more run through on whatever event you're shooting that day, you can do that at the practice range before you hit the main range. And that's fantastic. I wish that all ranges had something like that set up, because it's a huge, huge benefit to shooters. So Bianchi, wow, what can I say? It was an amazing, amazing trip for me. I competed in the event with a Smith & Wesson Pro Series 9mm 1911 lower with a Caspian Shroud, a Warren Moore Protocol Design prone pad and mover base, an Aimpoint Micro T1 2 MOA red dot optic, and of course my ASIM ammunition that is just fantastic and so precise. I got lucky and just in time for Bianchi Cup got the schnazzy new Safariland 014 holster, which is just awesome for any sort of race gun type competition, especially with, you know, compensator shrouds and all that thing. This holster is so modular. And I also got a very nice Tiffany blue Safariland belt, which looks gorgeous. I loved it. So that was great. And in all of my other sponsors, I can't thank them enough for allowing me to represent them and, you know, the opportunity to shoot amazing stuff and using amazing gear. It's amazing, and to have their support. Gotta say thank you. Thank you so much. You can check out all of my sponsors on my website. You can go to juliegollop.com, click on the icon at the top that says the gear, and there's a little bit of information about each of the great companies that have been so generous in their support of me. So yes, thank you very much for absolutely everything. You're awesome. And with that, I mean, I was ready to go. I felt completely confident in my equipment going into the match, knowing that, and knowing that it's just you, that you've got everything you need, is such a huge, huge benefit. And so when I found out what my schedule was, I was, excited to shoot. It's pretty interesting. If you are in contention to win in either your division or your special category at the Bianchi Cup, you're probably going to be shooting the events in a specific order, starting with the practical, followed by the plates, the barricade, and the mover. And so when I registered on Tuesday and got to look at that beautiful cup, along with the fantastic belt buckles and the wall of prizes that they were going to give away at one of the social events, I was excited. And a little bit nervous. I did start out with the practical event. I'm just going to flat out say it. Practical is my least favorite event at the Bianchi Cup. And that's because, man, when you're nervous and it's the first event, there's a lot of pressure at that event. And there is huge disaster factor, because it is the only event at Bianchi Cup where you can only shoot with your support hand on one string. Yes, it's only 6 rounds with your support hand from a 10-yard line. I know that. I can make those shots all day long. But when it's your first event of the Bianchi Cup, that's pressure, people. That's pressure, let me tell you. It also has the furthest shots. You're going to shoot out to 50. And yes, you get to flop on the ground and shoot prone. But still, there's a lot going on. And the weather conditions, the way the targets look, and how you go prone, and how the draw goes, and how you're feeling that day, that's tough. So it's really a nerve-wracking event for me. I got to say, it's just my least favorite. What can I say? So I go into that practical event with just one thing on my mind: survival. There have been years past when, you know, I've shot a bad score right at the 10-yard line, and I've, you know, like, it's felt like the entire earth has shattered, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's not possible. 1920 is no longer possible. And that's tough. But this year, I looked at it as, hey, just go out there and be gentle and soft on that trigger and shoot the best you can. If you drop points, you drop points. Survive it, do the best you can, and move on. And that's exactly what I did. I ended up shooting 2 8s at the practical event, 4 points down, and one was at that dreaded support hand 10-yard line string, and the other was one that was just out at the 50-yard line. So, yes, I survived. Was 19-20 possible for me anymore? No. I was happy with it. I did the best I could, and that was all I could ask for. So that was day one. You know, day one's done. Stress of the practical event is over. Wednesday was finished, and Thursday was going to be the biggest day for me. 2 events, the plate event and the barricade event. Plates. For an open gun shooter, this is probably the easiest event. That being said, you can't take anything for granted. It has the highest disaster factor because a bad shot at the plates could mean a miss versus a bad shot at any of the other events on paper targets could result in an 8 or a 5. 10 points down versus a couple points down, yeah, that's a big disaster factor. At that 10-yard line on the plate event, the goal is to try to hit the center of every plate so that you have a precise aiming point for the 15, 20, and 25-yard lines. And so when I stepped up to the line, that is exactly my plan. The one thing that was really challenging about this year's plate event, it was so dry in Colombia, and it was so dusty on that plate range and windy, and when you have 4 shooters on the line creating a bunch of dust going prone and the blast from the end of the gun raising up the dust, that could be a significant issue. And before I shot my run on the plates, I watched Rob Latham shoot his last string at the 25-yard line in a sandstorm, for lack of a better term. He was prone, and literally, he couldn't see the targets. His final shot, he couldn't see. And before the buzzer went, he just fired a shot, and that resulted in him missing a plate. So that brought a little bit of anxiety into my game just a little bit, and I made a mental note as I walked up to the line, okay, when you're going prone, get the gun out in front of you and onto the mat and not onto the dust to kind of keep that dust down and really pay attention to it. I had my own bit of a panic moment. My last string at the 20-yard line, my gun didn't go into battery. There was so much dust that it got gritty in there, and on my very last shot after I fired it, it didn't go into battery, and that sent me into this feeling of, oh no, this is not good. And so for my 25-yard line, I flopped down on that ground, and I shot those plates as quickly as I could. As soon as that red dot settled in on the middle of that plate, I was squeezing the trigger so that in the event that I did have a ka-chunk, a failure to feed, I could tap the back of the slide, get it into battery, and still have time to make up any shots. Fortunately, the wind died down a little bit, and it wasn't so dusty, but man, I was nervous for those plates. I ended up walking away with the plates with 48 out of 48, and a perfect score on them. Was very, very happy. A couple hours later, I was back to the main range shooting the barricade event. And the barricade is probably the most challenging event for iron sight divisions because they can't use a shroud or wings. They can rest their hands up against the barricade, but it's not the same as the open division where you actually have a gun that's purpose-built with a shroud for mounting the barricade. Probably the most challenging part of the barricade event for open is getting a good mount, grabbing on tight and being easy on that trigger. Because you shoot from both sides of the barricade, that involves transferring the gun to the support hand when you're shooting from the right side of the barricade. And so if you bobble that transition, you can find yourself rushing to get the shots off when you really want to be focusing on letting that dot settle to really get that X count up. The barricade event is where you're going to really rack up your X counts. So for me, I dropped a few more X's than I really wanted to, but it was okay. I survived it and came away with another 480 perfect score on the barricade event. That left Friday as mover day. And for me, up until the last day, I wasn't really paying attention to anyone else's score. I just assumed that everyone else was in the hunt. Jesse Duff, Vera Koo, Tiffany Piper, Anita. These women are all very, very strong contenders. But at Bianchi, it doesn't matter how other people shoot. You only need to worry about you. And if you get wrapped up in the fact that, hey, somebody may have dropped a plate or someone had a bad mover, that's going to mess with you mentally. You just need to get out there and do your thing. And that is exactly what I try to do. So even though I didn't really want to know that much was going on, of course, you know, everybody's talking about what's going on in the race. I learned that Jesse had dropped a plate and that Anita had gun issues on the mover. And regardless of having that information, I felt like more than any other time I've competed at Bianchi, I was just going to stick to my plan, stick to my game, and shoot the best scores that I could in the entire event. So I walked into the mover, and it was an experience. The mover is the nail-biter event. You stand in the middle of this huge range. People are watching from the stands behind you, and there are cameras everywhere. Oh, my goodness, there are cameras. I can now honestly say I know exactly how it feels to be Doug Koenig at the mover, because there were so many cameras on me, Jesse, Vera, everybody that was in contention. By far the most attended Bianchi Cup by media ever. And, you know, usually they're off doing their own thing, filming other people, or, yeah, you can expect that there'll be a few people around. Jamil Sawed is always there taking pictures for Smith & Wesson, but he's like my bud. So I see Jamil there, and it's like, yay, I have a fan club with me, yay. I can feel his energy and positivity just oozing out of him, and it's a great, great thing. And, of course, you've got NRA photographers there, and they're all so professional and very, very nice people. But I'll tell you what, Gun Talk TV was there. Jim Shepard was there with the Outdoor and the Shooting Wires. Roy Huntington was there. Marshall Holloway from Downrange TV was there. Doug Koenig's Championship Series entire crew was there. Shooting USA, of course, was there. I'm missing people, but there were so many members of the media with some sort of lens there to capture the moment. It was, wow, it was nerve-wracking. And so, you know, I stepped up into that box and I took my time. I visualized for every string. I focused. I breathed. I tried not to let anything distract me from the purpose of that 7 minutes of my life, which was to hit that X ring as many times as I could. The 10-yard line is the gimme yard line at the mover. It's the easiest yard line. And the target appears from the right, moves across the 60-foot opening before it disappears. And in that time frame, you have to shoot 6 shots on the target. Second pass of the mover, the target will come from the left, move over to the right, another 6 shots. It's close, it's reasonable, you have a lot of time. It's very, very doable. I was really happy with my 10-yard line, especially considering that I could feel every pump of blood through my body and my veins for that mover event. The 15-yard line at the mover is probably the one that people take the most for granted. It's just 5 minutes back, but you still got to get those 6 shots on target on both passes. And it's tough because if you watch that dot settle into the center of the X-ring and you get too crazy with it, you can start slapping that trigger and all of a sudden, boom, you've got shots in the 8. It's really easy to do. And so you have to be very, very focused and take nothing for granted at the 15-yard line. My 15-yard line was okay. I survived it. I was happy with it. Had a good X count. Moved on. 20-yard line. 20-yard line of the mover is my favorite yard line. Instead of shooting 6 on each pass, you actually shoot 2 more passes, and you only shoot 3 at a time. I don't know what it is, but everything just syncs up for me at the 20-yard line. I love the way I feel and what I see and how I shoot at 20 yards. And so I was really happy with my X count, really happy with my shots on target going into the 25. And in the 25-yard line, that's where things really get tough because that X seems like it's a million miles away and you want to hit it so badly that you're working so hard that anything that messes up, you shoot the shot too early, don't let the dots settle, you pop the shot high. You yank on that trigger just a little bit and you're going to get an 8, or in my case, I shot a 5. I shot a 5 at the 25-yard line. And I knew it. It felt horrible. It felt like it was off the target. It felt so bad. In reality, it was just barely a 5. I mean, really, just barely a 5, but it felt awful. And it was like the immediate, like, wow, okay, that didn't work out so well. I was doing so good. What's going on here? And it, you know, gave me that check of, hey, just accept anything in that 10 is good at this point. Keep them in the 10 ring and move on. And I ended up popping 2 shots just outside of the 10 ring, 2 more 8s. But the mover, I survived it. I ended up shooting a 1907, which is a decent score. it was good enough for 14th overall. So I'm really, really excited with that. And it was also good enough to be named the 2012 Ladies Bianchi Cup champion, and it's good. It's a great feeling because it's been a while. It's was 2009 was the last time I had won Bianchi as the women's champion, and before that it was 2007. So this makes my 3rd women's title at the Bianchi Cup, and to be able to share it with my teammates. Doug Koenig, who captured, oh, shocker, another one. this is his actual 14th Bianchi Cup. And he also won a junior title back in the day. So really, he's won 15 national titles at the Bianchi Cup. Yeah, he's incredible. And it was awesome. Yeah, so it was a really good week. It was a really, really good week. I posted a ton of photos to my Flickr page. I'll make sure to share those. I did a lot of behind-the-scenes camera work. I was very trigger-happy. Big shocker there, right? Hey, I could only shoot 192 bullets in the match. I had to take some shots some other way. And so I got a lot of really good pictures, behind-the-scenes photos of both the Flagler Cup and the Bianchi Cup. If you check out the Shooting Wire, and I'll share the link for the Guns and Glamour feature, I did a little bit of a red carpet write-up on Bianchi Cup Awards fashion, which is a little bit fun, funny, and of course talks about, you know, the things that are important about Bianchi, shooting, and yeah, how we look, and that was a lot of fun to write that. I hope to put together a video at some point with the photos and some other videos that I was able to capture from the Colt Speed event as well. So look for that coming soon. Immediately after Bianchi, I was rushing home to my hubby and the munchkin, who was so excited to see me. And it was a really long time to be away, over a week. I think it was about 10, 12 days. And that's always hard, but I can't thank my husband enough for being so supportive and saying, yep, go do your thing, and we'll make it work. And so, I love you. Thank you very much, honey. My time home was very short-lived because immediately after Bianchi, I went hunting for bear. Yes, bear hunting in Montana. I'm a Montana resident, so I got a tag, and I went out to the Iron Wheel Ranch. And predator hunting is probably a little controversial compared to the other types of hunting, but I have always wanted to try bear meat, learn how to cook it, and they're an amazing, incredible animal. And so I took over 500 photos on that trip, and I will be sharing those and my experience there with an upcoming blog post. So watch that and check out the photos on my Flickr as well. And now it's the end of June, and that means I've got a lot of other good stuff going on. I am getting ready to go on a girl's gun getaway. that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. It's not what you think. It's not a bunch of competition shooters in my world getting together. I'm actually meeting up with super talented lady gun bloggers from all different walks of life who have their own special niche. And we're getting together at a GGG ranch, Girls Gun Getaway Ranch, in a few weeks to talk about shooting, shoot some guns, have a lot of fun, maybe even try a little bit of hunting, learn more about each other, and kind of talk about the role of women and what we're all doing to get the word out about shooting sports and shooting and gun safety and all the things that are important. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. And then immediately after that, I am heading down to Tennessee to hang out with the guys from Shooting USA to film some impossible shots. Yes, I'm so excited. I've already done 3 impossible shots so far with them that you'll be able to watch in the upcoming season, but I am going to be working on 3 more, and 2 I'm going to be using the new Smith & Wesson M&P Shield for. I'm really excited about that. Yeah, so lots of stuff going on. It's pretty cool. I have been so busy that I really haven't had the time to put together everything that I want to talk about for the next segment of How to Become a Sponsored Shooter. Last podcast, we talked about website stuff, and in this one, I wanted to talk to you about different social media options out there, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Pinterest, all that good stuff. But I really want to make sure that I'm thorough and give you a lot of good information. So I've already rambled on like forever from this podcast, so I'm going to hold off on getting that information to you, but look for that in an upcoming podcast. But I do want to answer some of your questions answered, because I have been totally slacking when it comes to that little part of this podcast. So without further ado, some of your questions answered are now here. I received one question from a fellow shooter out there who wanted to know what type of television shows I liked and watched. I actually don't have cable TV. I get all of my television fix, if you will, from Apple TV through Netflix, iTunes, or I just go ahead and order DVDs. We don't have cable. And so that means that I'm never really watching stuff on time, but I love me some Top Shot. I love, of course, Shooting USA, Shooting Gallery, and Gun Talk TV, and you know, all the shooting and hunting shows out there that are pretty cool. I watch those whenever I get the chance, especially when I'm on the road. I'm a Food Network freak, and so you can almost bet that if Iron Chef America is on while I'm traveling, yeah, that's what I'm going to be watching. I love Grey's Anatomy. I also have a guilty pleasure, and I don't know if I should admit this, but I love watching America's Next Top Model. I think there's a lot of good information about there about branding and marketing, and I like me some reality TV. What can I say? And I am a huge Mad Men fan. I really, really enjoy that show, the history aspect of it, and it's a lot of fun. So that's what I do for TV when I get a chance. But honestly, I'm not usually watching TV that often, and I have a lot of catching up to do on a lot of my TV programs. So like I said, Netflix is a big friend of mine, and iTunes for catching up on that. So thanks for asking. The next question is, in the vein of getting sponsored and keeping your statistics, should you concentrate on major matches only or all the matches you shoot? And that's a good question. In a previous podcast, I talked about the importance of knowing and keeping your stats so that you can provide that information to potential sponsors. And the answer to that question is basically yes. Keep as many stats as you can. Stats are always a good thing. The more statistics you have, the better information you have, especially when it comes to how much you've shot, how much time you put into something. At the end of the year, you can put in, you know, or make a direct correlation between your performance and how much time you put into to preparing for events. I don't know as if you need to necessarily supply all of that statistical information to your potential sponsors unless it's somebody that's local. you kind of have to take it as a case by case. But one of the things that you can say by recording those statistics and every time that you hit a local match or a major match is that you can say when presenting to a potential sponsor, hey, not only am I active in, you know, major competitions throughout the United States and world by competing at national and regional championships, but I'm also really active locally. And by being at my local range every month, I'm there and I'm somebody that new shooters can approach and ask me questions about what I can do to become a better shooter or what gear should I buy. And that there's a direct correlation there. So statistics, keep track of as much as you can is what I'm saying. Does it need to be as in-depth for local matches? No, but if you do keep that information, there's a lot of good stuff that you can derive from it. So good question, and I hope it works out for you. Okay, for the third and final question of your questions answered, this one says, Julie, love the podcast. Thank you. it says here, I was wondering if I could make a suggestion for a future podcast. I would like to hear what you do for mental preparation prior to and during a match. I remember you mentioning during a previous interview you like to maintain a routine, but I'd like to know if there are any additional things you do. That's a really great question, and yes, absolutely. I think the one area that every shooter can improve is their mental game, and that's, you know, Doug Koenig even. I mean, he hasn't shot a 192Xs yet. Is he going to? Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. Could he do it based on absolute skill? Absolutely. It's that mental aspect of actually doing it in a match and making it happen. That's what it comes down to. It's the mental aspect of shooting that's going to be the big challenge for every shooter out there. So one of the things that I do in the off season is I dig up as many sports psychology books and mental management and even athlete stories, motivational stuff to read, especially during that off season time frame. I find that a lot of sports psychology books pretty much cover the same thing, but it's all in the delivery. One of the first books that I read on mental management was The New Toughness Training Guide for Sports by James E. Lohr. And it's about being tough in competition. And it's a really, really great book to read, especially for your first mental management book. But there are other tons of great books out there, especially on the subject. I mean, it's sports. It's a huge, huge thing. And like I've read Michael Phelps's book, get insight into the mind of successful athletes. I read a lot of business management, marketing, success-oriented kind of books that I find are very helpful. And just kind of building that base of knowledge around the mental aspect of shooting well and performance is really helpful and beneficial, I believe. So that's one of the things that I focus on throughout the year to a certain degree, but definitely in the off season. As far as specific preparation when I'm competing, I do have a somewhat of a routine, but it's also very sport specific. Because I'm competing in so many different shooting sports, my mental routine and plan for how I tackle courses of fire varies with each sport based on the important aspects of that particular sport and my weaknesses. You know, being honest with yourself about your weaknesses is probably one of the toughest things for shooters to do. That's hard to admit to yourself when you have an area, you have a problem area. And if you're in a match and you still think it's a problem, yes, you can go through the mantra and say, I am amazing at strong hand shooting, or whatever the case may be. But I find it's more useful and helpful to focus on the things that I know will help me be a better strong hand shooter, or whatever that little problem is or weakness in my game that I have. So when I step up to the line and I'm shooting a course of fire, I think about the problem areas and the potential disaster factors, and not just what they are, but more of how I need to be, what I need to do, how I need to shoot, so that they aren't a problem in the stage, so that I can be as successful as possible. If I know that I'm going to be shooting at a very, very difficult target from a long ways away, I'm thinking about trigger control on that shot. What I think about trigger control on a hose fest stage in USPSA, where targets the furthest one, 7 yards, absolutely not. Not even going to cross my mind. I'm going to be thinking about speed. So it all depends on the sport and what the focus area is for the specific event that I'm shooting or the specific stage at that time. But I find that thinking about those problem areas and, more importantly, the steps that I need to take so that I'm going to be successful is very, very important. The one thing that I also find that I do in order to compete well is I have a routine of how I prepare for a stage. And that is as elaborate as how I get ready for the stage. I don't want to have any surprises. I want to make sure that I'm there plenty of time in advance if I'm starting an event at like the Yankee Cup, or if I'm shooting in an IPSC or IDPA match, I want to know where I am in the rotation so that, you know, 4 shooters out, I've got all of my mags ready to go and I'm already thinking about shooting the stage. And even though I'm pasting targets and helping out, I'm kind of going through what I need to do in my head as that's going on. The walkthrough of an IDPA, USPSA, Steel Challenge time frame is also a critical time to kind of program the brain in, and I really focus on exactly how I want to shoot the stage, do a little visualization of what I need to do, and then when it's my turn to actually load and make ready and get ready to go, that's kind of when I kind of clear things out and focus on one thing before that start signal sounds or whatever the indicator is. So if it's an IPSC match, I'm going to be listening for the first tone of that buzzer to get things going. If I'm competing in Bianchi, I've got my hands in the surrender position, the start position, and I'm thinking about what I need to do in order to make that first shot happen. And that's kind of how it goes. Mental management is very personal. And the most successful people at mental management kind of, well, they're honest with themselves. And they learn what works. And they don't get wrapped up in the negative. They're constantly thinking about the positive, and they're constantly moving forward. And so, you know, I think that everybody can improve and make their mental game better. But for me, it's something that I know that I constantly need to work at it, and I'm constantly looking for different ways to deal with it. And because I'm constantly evolving as a shooter, my mental game has got to evolve as well. So this is a really, really great question. I've got quite a bit of information about the mental aspect of shooting in my book Shoot towards the end of the book. So hopefully you can kind of get some good information about that as well from there. Those were some really great questions, and thank you so much for sending them. If you have a question about this or other podcasts, please feel free to send me an email at julie@juliegollub.com, or you can connect with me through Twitter, Facebook, Google+, YouTube, all that good stuff. Find a way to message me there. You can find all of those links at the top of my website, juliegollub.com, along the upper left-hand corner, and I would love to hear from you.
That wraps up the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. This podcast was brought to you by Smith & Wesson, Benelli USA, and Warren Tactical Sights. For more information, please visit my website, juliegollub.com. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and my blog. So until next time, be safe and have fun.